we're to the point today, we've been talking for several weeks about the plans to build the temple and the history behind that, some of the politics behind it, some of the difficulties that they faced. And today we're going to actually look at the temple that Solomon built. Quite a bit of reading here. And then some pictures. I've given you in the handout two of the key pictures that you'll see in the slides this morning. And as soon as Corey gets all of the website caught up again from his trip to Arkansas and various places, you'll have access. Excuse me. You'll have access to these pictures and some others. All of the pictures on the screen that you see are in a file that's in our website. So you can download them and look at them. And also the audio version is there. So if you miss a lesson or want to go back and review one, they're available on the woodlandoaks.org website. So this is where we were last week when we left in the 480th year after the Israelites had come out of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, the second month, he began to build the temple of the Lord. If you run out of handouts, you just have a few left, don't you? And I have a few more up here if you run out. No, that's fine. I think there's enough for everyone to have one. All right, so this was the time in which it was built. And it's a precise measurement of the length of time from the Exodus to the building of the temple. Two key elements in the history of the Jews, and it's almost absolutely certain that the scholars, the scribes who wrote this down, were very careful to get the numbers right. Although some people criticize this particular verse as being too long, but this would place the Exodus in about 1450 B.C., and this is happening around 975 B.C., 480 years later. 14, you have to look at the exact numbers, but it does turn out to be 480 years. Now notice this, when Solomon began to build the temple of the Lord, we're going to follow the scriptures mainly in 1 Kings, but there's a notation made in 2 Chronicles where you have a duplicate account. We talked about that as well. And I suspect that the 1 Kings account is more precise and it's more detailed than the one in Chronicles. The one in Chronicles was the one that the king published, and it has been, all of the negative aspects of it pretty much have been eradicated. But Solomon began to build the temple of the Lord on Mount Moriah. Now, we've talked about that, and that becomes important because it was the threshing floor of Araunah, where the Lord had appeared to his father David. On the threshing floor of Araunah, the Jebusite, the place provided by David. David bought that threshing site. It was a rock on the top of the mountain where they were threshing out wheat when they had a plague, and to stay the plague, David built an altar and made some offerings, and God stopped the plague. So that's in the last chapter of 2 Samuel. And so he began building on the second day of the second month of the fourth year of his reign, and that of course is a duplicate account. The foundation Solomon laid for building the temple of God was 60 cubits long and 20 cubits wide, using the cubit of the old standard. That's in parenthesis in the NIV. It isn't in parenthesis in some other versions because they didn't have parentheses when this was written, of course. And so it's an interpretation of the structure of the sentence to put it there. We'll see a few more items where that sort of thing happens. But what does it imply when it says the cubit of the old standard? Well, that implies that there was an older cubit that was different from the one they were using at the time. You see that? And the reason why they're using the cubit of the old standard is undoubtedly because that's the cubit that was in vogue at the time that Moses built the tabernacle. And so the temple is based upon the design of the tabernacle, as we'll recognize. And so they use the same cubit that they used. And it turns out, and I'll show you perhaps next week or later on, the archaeological evidence that there was a cubit that was longer than the 18-inch cubit, which was the standard after the time of Solomon. It's that the cubit that the temple is based on is 20.6 inches, or 20 and a half inches is probably accurate enough. And that's the cubit of the old standard. And when we get next week to looking at Ezekiel, we'll find that in the description of Ezekiel's temple, there's also a cubit which is different from the one that they're involved with in the time of Solomon. It was a cubit plus a hand breadth, and so it'd be 18 inches plus 3 or 4 more inches of the width of your hand, the four fingers of your hand. And so there was an, you might call it the royal cubit or the religious cubit that they were going to use in the construction of these buildings. Whether or not they used that in the time of Herod, we don't know. But we'll get to that point in 2 weeks when we talk about the temple which Herod built. So, the portico at the front of the temple was 20 cubits long across the width of the building and 20 cubits high. So they're going to give the dimensions of these things. And on the top diagram that you have in your handout, you can kind of see the floor plan here. And it's described and dimensions are given, and most of them are consistent between Chronicles and Kings as to the size of the structure. We'll learn some things about it when we see what it was, what the dimensions were. The interior of this structure, which is, here's the most holy place, and here is the holy place. This is twice the dimensions of what we saw in the case of the tabernacle, but it's an interior dimension. Here we're talking about a structure made out of stone, large stones. And so the dimensions that are given for it being 20 cubits long and 20 cubits wide for the most holy place, and 20 cubits by 40 cubits for the outer room, the holy place. Those are interior dimensions, and we'll show you why that's the case shortly. Now, this looks just like the plan that I showed you earlier. We talked about a plan which David got directly from God, he claimed, by inspiration. And it looked just like this, except for these two pillars. They weren't in the original plan, apparently, because they're not talked about by David. They're not mentioned at all. Nor are they in the plan that Ezekiel had. So they may be an addition, and we'll talk about that in a minute. The temple that King Solomon built for the Lord was 60 cubits long, 20 wide, and 30 high. So it's taller than it is wide, although the most holy place is a 20 cubit cube. It's only 20 cubits high. It's contained within the structure of the building, of course. The portico at the front of the main hall of the temple extended the width of the temple. Now, that doesn't mean it extended, as you look at it here in the bottom picture that you have, it's as wide as the interior dimensions of the most of the holy place. It doesn't extend all the way out to the width of the entire building. And the building, the lower structures on the side, a series of small storage rooms. It's described in detail here in a minute. We'll look at that. He made narrow clerestory windows in the temple. What's a clerestory window? Any architects in our midst here who knows? Do we use that term anymore? Anybody have clerestory windows in their home? It's a window at the top of the wall. That's a very good description of what we're talking about here. And you can see those in the side of the temple in the bottom picture that you have there. And he had a large structure. The interior of this thing, 40, the outer room here, 40 cubits by 20 cubits. That's about, 40 cubits is, about, I think that turns out to be about 75 feet or so. That's a big structure. It's bigger than the room we have here by a large amount. And 30 cubits is almost 50 feet tall. 20 and a half inches to a cubit. And so I had that in my mind, and it's escaped me at the moment as to what 40 cubits would be. But that would be 800 inches, I think. Is that right? 20. And you look at that, 100 inches is about 8 feet. And 800 inches would be, that turns out to be 60, about 65 feet, I guess is what that is. Okay. So, against the walls of the main hall and inner sanctuary, he built a structure around the building in which there were side rooms. So we see that that's the structure on either side of the temple. And he goes to give the details about how they're built here. Let's look at that first, then we'll look at it. The lowest floor was 5 cubits wide, the middle floor 6 cubits, and the third floor 7 cubits. It's three rooms stacked, halls of rooms stacked one on top of the other, and the bigger rooms are on the top, which look, at first glance looks kind of strange, but there's a reason for that. He made offset ledges around the outside of the temple so that nothing would be inserted into the temple walls. Why don't you want any structure inserted into the wall of the temple? Well, that might weaken it, I suppose. And there may be other reasons why he wants it that way. So here's a picture kind of like the one you have there with the two pillars on the outside. I think those pillars were not part of the porch or portico and as they're depicted here. Now, if we cut this building away and look at the details here, we'll look at that. In building the temple, and I want to take some note of this business here. In building the temple, only blocks of dressed at the quarry were used, and no hammer, chisel, or other iron tool was heard at the temple site while it was being built. And that's most remarkable. And I want to read, I didn't put it on a slide, but I want to read something else that he says about his technology here. When Solomon built his own palace, all of these structures, this is verse 9 of chapter 7 of 1 Kings. All of these structures from the outside of the great courtyard from the foundation to eaves were made of blocks of high-grade stone cut to size and trimmed with a saw on their inner and outer faces. The foundations were laid with large stones of good quality, some measuring 10 cubits and others 8. Now, those stones were difficult to handle, as you can imagine. They weigh several tons. Above were high-grade stones cut to size and cedar beams. The great courtyard was surrounded by a wall of three courses of dressed stone and one course of trimmed cedar beams, as was the inner courtyard of the temple of the Lord with its portico. So it was common to both his palace and also to the temple, which he built at about the same time. So the stonework was most remarkable then in that it was these were pre-worked stones so that they could be shipped to the site and directly inserted into the walls where they were being where the walls were being constructed. And that means that whoever is doing the planning has to be very precise about the stones and the. They must have been marked in some way so that when they were brought to the site, the builders knew where to put the stone. And that turns out to be kind of interesting because of a prophecy that comes out of this. The entrance to the lowest floor was on the south side of the temple. So there's a door midway in this lower building around the outside. And a stairway led up to the middle level and from there to the third level. So he built the temple and completed it, roofing it with beams and cedar planks. And he built the side rooms all along the temple. The height of each was 5 cubits, and they were attached to the temple by beams of cedar. So there's 3 stories on the side rooms, and you can see that the whole temple is about 5 stories tall. 50 feet is a pretty good-sized building. This ceiling in here is what, about 25 feet, maybe about half of this. It's much taller. It's an impressive building for the time in which it was built. So here we go with a cutaway of the building, and you can see. I want to point out first of all about these side room, these storage rooms, which were apparently all connected by doors. And you can see the offset ledges here so that the beams could be placed on the ledges in the next floor built and then offset again to make an even larger room for the third story. And that's why these rooms got bigger as they went up, because of the offset in the ledges. And, of course, the wall of the temple then became more narrow the taller you went. And the interior here, we'll come back and look at that in some detail in a minute, but these ideas of cherubim that we'll talk about shortly that are in this particular artist's drawing are the cherubim the way the pagans looked at them. They're not cherubim the way they're described in the Bible. So disregard these creatures back here in the most holy place. Here's the Ark of the Covenant, and here's a priest with the ark with the altar of incense, table of showbread, and there were 10 of these lampstands instead of just one. There's this huge building. We got to get furnishings for it. And so David and Solomon both felt like it needed much more equipment than the original tabernacle had. All right, we'll come back to some of these details in a moment. Now, in building the temple, only blocks dressed at the quarry were used. And that's referred to several times in the New Testament. We don't know whether it was in building this temple, or perhaps the one that Herod built, that there was some kind of a mistake made. And in Acts, the fourth chapter, where Peter and the apostles are called to account for healing the man who was lame from birth, you recall that. We're being called to account today for an act of kindness shown to a cripple and are asked how he was healed. Then know this, you and everyone else in Israel, it is by the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom you crucified, but whom God raised from the dead, that this man stands before you completely healed. He is the stone, that is Jesus, is the stone you builders rejected, which has become the capstone. And so the story apparently was that they got a stone from the quarry, and it was marked in some way, and they couldn't figure out where to put it in the building, so they just discarded it. Well, they shouldn't have, of course. The word there is either capstone or cornerstone, and we don't know which, but it was an important stone, you see, and that was a story that went with the construction of the temple. It's mentioned by Peter as well in his in 1 Peter. Together, right. I suspect it was a capstone. And the way we have this picture, there is no important stone at the top. There ought to be a pinnacle somewhere with a stone at the top of it. And that may be how Herod's temple was built, because remember where the devil brought Jesus in the temptation? To the pinnacle of the temple. And had him stand there and then told him to do what? Cast yourself down, because the angels will bear you up. You won't ever hit the ground. But Jesus refused to do that. You know that story. Oh, wait a minute. I hit it twice. The word of the Lord came to Solomon, as for the temple you are building, if you follow my decrees, carry out my regulations, and keep all of my commands and obey them, I will fulfill through you the promise I gave to David your father. And I will live among the Israelites and will not abandon my people Israel. So in the midst of the construction, God appears to Solomon and reminds him that all of his work there depends upon him also behaving himself, right? Following all of the decrees. And he did that for most of his life, but as he got older, he abandoned that, and that gave Israel fits later on. They had a lot of problems. Okay, so Solomon built the temple, completed it. He lined its interior walls with cedar boards, paneling them from the floor of the temple to the ceiling. So he's built all of the structure outside, you see. And he covered the floor of the temple with planks of pine. He partitioned off 20 cubits at the rear of the temple with cedar boards from floor to ceiling to form within the temple an inner sanctuary, the most holy place. So it's a 20-cubit cube. It's 20 cubits in each dimension. The main hall in front of this room was 40 cubits long. The inside of the temple was cedar, carved with gourds and open flowers. Everything was cedar. No stone was to be seen. So on the inside, it was completely covered with wood. He prepared the inner sanctuary within the temple and set the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord there. And in doing so, we're going to see a specific phrase that's used a number of times. Particularly next week, we'll talk about bringing the Ark of the Covenant into the temple before we go into our story about Ezekiel. So he overlaid the inside with pure gold. And he also overlaid the altar of cedar. Solomon covered the inside of the temple with pure gold, and he extended gold chains across the front of the inner sanctuary, which was overlaid with gold. He also overlaid with gold the altar that belonged to the inner sanctuary. That's the altar of incense. It's mentioned twice in here, but it must excuse me, it must be the same altar. For the entrance of the inner sanctuary, he made doors of olive wood with five-sided jambs. Anybody have any idea how a five-sided door jamb would look? I that's something of a mystery to me. I don't know. I suspect it may mean that instead of just side jambs and the bar across the top, that it went up and in and then across or something to give it enough angles. But anyway, it's something that he did. And on the two olive wood doors, he carved cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers, and overlaid the cherubim palm trees with beaten gold. In the same way, he made four-sided jambs of olive wood for the entrance to the main hall. And I'm not really sure about four-sided jambs either. You don't count the threshold at the bottom, so it's the side jambs and the jamb across the top. It's the fitting into which the door fits. So we're at a loss to know the difference between a four-sided and a five. Well, it's one jam is the difference between a four-sided and a five-sided jam, but how that looks, I don't know. He also made two pine doors, each having two leaves that turned in sockets. And so the doors were double hinged. There were two doors, but each one of them consisted of two panels attached together with a hinge in the middle, sockets. He carved cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers on them and overlaid them with gold, hammered evenly over the carvings. So he carved things in the wood, and then the gold that was overlaid took the image that had been carved into the cedar. Now, it also just makes one little notation here in 2 Chronicles. It isn't even mentioned in 1 Kings. He made the curtain of blue, purple, and crimson yarn and fine linen with cherubim worked into it. Where did we see that first? Well, that was something in the tabernacle, wasn't it? It divided the most holy place from the holy place. So there was a three-colored curtain that hung separating those two areas. And it's just mentioned in passing here. But it was also a feature of Herod's temple. How do we know that? Because the curtain in the temple was torn in two when? At Jesus' crucifixion, wasn't it? When he died. And so there was such a curtain also in Herod's temple, and there was one here as well. And so you see, sorry, I've got a frog in my throat this morning. Okay, so anyway, it's something like this, and we don't know whether the curtain hung in front of the doors or behind them in the dividing of the room. I would suspect that the curtain's in front, and then there are still doors behind that. But that is a very striking image, isn't it? Now, it's all overlaid with gold on the inside. You can see the palm trees on the walls and that sort of thing. And see that the roof of the most holy place is lowered, and here the floor of the most holy place is raised because he's got lots of room. The main building is 30 cubits high, and that room is only 20 cubits high. And you get a feel for the difference in the size of the little man, the priest who's standing there, and this huge building that he's in. In the inner sanctuary, he made a pair of cherubim, and that was these creatures that you saw. That was some artist's idea of what a cherubim was. But we have cherubim described several times in the Bible, and a careful study shows that they have something of human form with animal faces, and they're not animals. They stand upright. Although their legs are not human legs, they look more like the legs of a calf, it says. But they have hands, and they also have wings. As they're described in the fourth chapter of Revelation, they have six wings. One wing, he made a pair of cherubim of olive wood, each 10 cubits high. Those are big, big statues you see here. 17 feet tall. One wing of the first cherub was 5 cubits long, the other wing 5 cubits, 10 cubits from wingtip to wingtip. Now, the proportions of a human being are such that the width of your hands is approximately your height. Are you aware of that? I guess most of you are. And so if you're 6 feet tall, then your wingspan should be 6 feet. And these cherubim, which is the plural of cherub, have those dimensions. They're 10 cubits tall, and each of their wings is 5 cubits, 10 cubits from wingtip to wingtip. So the length of the wings is apparently from their backbone. The second cherub also measured 10 cubits, for the two cherubim were identical in size and shape. The height of each cherub was 10 cubits. He placed the cherubim inside the innermost room of the temple with their wings spread out. The wing of one cherub touched one wall, while the wing of the other touched the other wall, and their wings touched each other in the middle of the room, and he overlaid the cherubim with gold. Now, that tells you that the 20 cubits is the internal dimensions of the room, doesn't it? Doesn't include the stone that forms the structure on the outside. And so that's how they measured it. So the 20 cubit measurement is the interior dimensions. And so since the outer sanctuary has the same width, undoubtedly it's the same way. So the building's much bigger than the usable space within it. And here's a rough idea of what that looks like, I think. This is Rodney Treadway has a picture on the internet, and in your handout, I have also a site where you can look at some of the stuff about Solomon's temple, and the site is given below in this one. You can look at it on the internet and get that site if you want to look at it. The original picture that Treadway drew had the proportions wrong, in that the wings, the cherubim were taller than the wingspan. But on the computer, you can bring down one dimension without bringing down the other. So I compressed it vertically to make it the same. And you see that above where the wings touch, the Ark of the Covenant sits on the floor, and you're looking at it linearly with the poles running from front to back. And we talked about that some before, too. And so they have wings that cover their body, wings. These are not the biggest wings. Apparently, these are the largest wings with which they probably would fly. And there are wings on the backside as well, three pairs of wings. Okay, on the walls all around the temple in both the inner and outer rooms, he carved cherubim. I wish we knew a little more about how they looked. That impression, incidentally, had four faces on each head, which was the way that Ezekiel saw them, and we'll look at that next time and get those details. Cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers. He also covered the floor of both inner and outer rooms of the temple with gold. A huge amount of gold. Solomon also made all the furnishings that were in the Lord's temple, the golden altar, the golden table on which was the bread of the presence, the lampstands of pure gold, five on the right and on the left in front of the inner sanctuary. So there's 10 lampstands, the gold floral work and lamps and tongs, the pure gold dishes, wick trimmers, sprinkling bowls, ladles, and censers. And those show up, incidentally, in the story of Daniel. And they were taken to Babylon, and the king of Babylon drags them out to use them in a drunken revelry, you'll recall. And the gold sockets are for the doors of the innermost room, the most holy place, and also for the doors of the main hall of the temple. So gold was used extensively, and some have asked, wouldn't gold be too soft for some of these purposes? But probably, although it says pure gold here, they didn't have the technology to analyze the details of the minor constituents, and there must have been enough other elements in the gold to make it hard. Now, King Solomon sent to Tyre and brought Huram. Now, remember, the king of Tyre was named Hiram. This is somebody else. This is Huram, whose mother was a widow from the tribe of Naphtali, and whose father was a man of Tyre and a craftsman in bronze. And so his father had apparently died, and he had taken over the work. Huram was highly skilled and experienced in all kinds of bronze work. He came to King Solomon and did all the work assigned to him. And so he comes. See, he's a pagan as well, but he's so skilled in this that Solomon uses him in preparing all of the bronze work. All the objects that Huram Abi, here his name is extended, made for King Solomon for the temple of the Lord were polished bronze. The king had them cast in clay molds in the plains of the Jordan between Succoth and Zarethan. All these things that Solomon made amounted to so much that the weight of the bronze was not determined. He had so much metal. And that's amazing. He had collected that apparently from the countries around and sent for some more and had all that he could use, and it's a huge amount. And it was quite a treasure, as we'll see. When the temple was destroyed, all of this bronze work was cut up and carried off to Babylon in pieces, because bronze was an extremely valuable metal for all sorts of things. He, that is Huram, cast two bronze pillars, each 18 cubits high and 12 cubits around by line. And these are the two pillars on either side of the front of the temple. He also made two capitals of cast bronze and set on the tops of the pillars. Each capital was 5 cubits high. This is a big post. 18 cubits long is about 30 feet tall. And so these are big pillars, and on top of them he puts a capital, you see, which is a topping to it, a network of interwoven chains, festoons the capitals on top of the pillars, seven for each capital. He made pomegranates in two rows encircling each network to decorate the capitals on top of the pillars. And there's a famous archaeological artifact that was, there's arguments about whether it's real or not, but it's a pomegranate that looks to have been broken off of this structure, which they think may have been one of the few remaining discovered pieces of the temple that Solomon built. It seems to be that ancient. He did the same for each capital. The capitals on top of the pillars of the portico were in the shape of lilies, 4 cubits high. Now, the capitals are the structures on top. Incidentally, I noticed when we ate once, we don't do this very often, but at the Cheesecake Factory, there are big pillars inside the room. If you notice, the capitals on top of it is kind of like this. It opens out like a flower on top. And although it's not as big, it is the same kind of an idea. Above the bowl-shaped part next to the network, there were 200 pomegranates in rows all around. He erected the pillars at the portico. See, he erected the pillars at the portico of the temple, but it doesn't say he used the pillars to support the portico, the porch. And I think they were just on the outside, and I'll tell you why in a moment. The pillar to the south he named Jachin. The pillar, the one to the north, is Boaz. Did you ever have items of your house and give them names? Did you have the kitchen refrigerator is named something? Okay, so here's Jachin and Boaz, and those were famous names. Boaz was, who was Boaz in historically at this point in time? It's David's grandfather, isn't it? Is that right? David's grandfather was named Boaz. I don't know who was named Jachin. And those names have meaning. One of them means, we looked that up. What was it, Gail? He is established is what Jachin means. And Boaz means what? Strength. That's right. Boaz has to do with strength. So I think they were erected on either side of the structure, and they're taller than the other reason for believing they're not involved in the support of the porch is that they're taller than the porch is. Now, the reason why this is kind of interesting is that archaeologists have discovered about 6 or 7 pagan temples throughout this region of the world. Syria and in Philistia, there are a number of the ruins of pagan temples. And we talked about the temple to Dagon, where the Ark of the Covenant was taken when it was captured by the Philistines. And as they've uncovered these at the base, they don't have the temples anymore, but they have the foundation of it and can tell where it was built. And the foundations of 2 pillars on either side of the opening of these temples is a common feature of pagan temples. And I wonder if perhaps Hiram suggested that they do that for this temple too. It wasn't in David's plan, but Solomon may have bought it. I don't know. But anyway, there's no indication that it ever led to idolatrous worship or anything, but it was kind of interesting that it may have been Hiram's contribution to the architecture. And he made a bronze altar, 20 cubits long, 20 cubits wide, and 10 cubits high. Now, the original altar for the tabernacle was 5 cubits. So it's 4 times as long and wide, and a little higher than the other one was as well. So all of that, here's how it will look at. There's one other item that he makes. He made the sea. And when you read about that, you might wonder, why is it called a sea? Well, it's a structure that holds a whole lot of water. And so he may have nicknamed it that. I don't know. He made the sea of cast metal, circular in shape, measuring 10 cubits from rim to rim and 5 cubits high. It took a line of 30 cubits to measure around it. Below the rim, guards encircled it, 10 to a cubit. The guards were cast in 2 rows and 1 piece with the sea. Now, the technologists of our day say it should have taken the line not of 30 cubits to go around it, but how long? 31.4 cubits. That's pi, see? Well, what, did pi change since there? No, but I think that has to do with the structure of the sentence. It took a line of 30 cubits to measure around it below the rim. See, whoever, these sentences all ran together in the original language, and whoever parsed this out put the below the rim to the gourds encircling it 10 to a cubit. But if they're 10 to a cubit, and it comes out even, there ought to be three sets of 10 in a circle around it, and it should be 30 cubits. I think the below the rim goes with it. And so he's not looking, the line isn't looking at the size of it, at because, as we'll see, the sea stood on 12, notice down in the bottom down here, we'll come back to that in a minute. It was, the rim was like the rim of a cup, like a lily blossom, and so it opened outward, and so the rim was bigger than the structure itself. I think 30 cubits is probably good. It isn't really an accusation about the value of pi. The sea stood on 12 bulls, three facing north, three facing west, three facing south, three facing east. I don't know that the bulls were mentioned by David either. The sea rested on top of them, and their hindquarters were toward the center. It was a handbreadth in thickness, so the walls of this thing made out of cast bronze. And its rim was like the rim of a cup, like a lily blossom. It held 2,000 baths. So if you take a bath every week for 20 years, is that 2,000 baths? Or no. The idea that a bath is a measure of liquid in their day, and the total turns out to be about 10,000 gallons. And that's enough for a small swimming pool. Most swimming pools are more like 18 to 20,000 gallons to give you enough room to swim back and forth. But that's a lot of water. And the original laver that was in front of the tabernacle was much smaller than that. Okay, now those three bulls, that's kind of interesting. There they are in the lower left corner, three facing in the four compass points. And that thing's full of water. Now, he made some stands, and there's a piece of one just to the left of the sea there that held water as well. These were on wheels and could be wheeled around. There were five on each side of the temple, and they were used for washing the sacrifices as they were dissected for the sacrificial altar offerings. Now, you also see here, the altar, roughly, it should be square. It doesn't look square in this picture, but I guess the dimensions, the perspective is wrong. And here are those smaller movable panels containing a bowl of water. It says specifically that the priest washed from this water. And here are the 12 bulls upon which it rested. And I don't know where that idea came from. Here in this picture is one of the two pillars. The thing faces east, so this would be the one on the north, and I guess that one on the north is Boaz. But you see, it holds up the portico in this picture, and I don't think that's the case. And you get the idea of the front door made out of two panels that are hinged in the middle. That's the idea there. When all the work King Solomon had done for the temple of the Lord was finished, he brought in the things his father David had dedicated, the silver and the gold and the furnishings, and he placed them in the treasuries of the Lord's temple. So, there you have it. It's a fantastic structure that was known worldwide. It was admired for its construction, as opposed to something like the pyramids, which were relatively solid in structure. This was an amazing piece of architecture for the time around 970 BC. That's pretty early. So, That's what it all led up to. How does it compare to the tabernacle? Well, it's bigger and grander and more majestic. And the idea, that was David and Solomon's idea, to make it so big and so wonderful that people couldn't reject it, I suppose. And so they brought in, we'll see next week, they brought in the tabernacle, folded it up, and put it in one of the storerooms. So we'll continue the story. I want you to keep reading. I didn't put that in your schedule for the classes, but I want to spend a little bit of time on the story about bringing the Ark of the Covenant into the temple. It was an amazing thing that happened at that point. And there's something about where the Ark was placed in the most holy place that archaeologists have discovered that give us the precise measurement of the cubit in Moses' time. And that's what we'll look at next time. Thank you very much for your attention this morning.